We're beginning the 15th chapter of 2 Samuel, and in this portion of the book of Samuel, Absalom has now been returned from his exile in Geshur for some 2 years. He also, during this time, has eventually gotten back into the good favor of David. He did this with the help of Joab, so that now he can appear openly in the court of the king. He does not have to remain removed from that. And we see that in this chapter, he begins now to openly and positively take steps towards rebellion against King David. He is going to build himself up. He is going to use sly and cunning means, clever means, to gain the favor of the people and to put down the favor of King David in the eyes of the rest of the nation. So beginning in the first verse of chapter 15 of 2 Samuel, "And it came to pass after this, that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him." So he now begins to get some kind of a force together that are his men, a sort of a remnant of an army to begin with here, 50 chariots and horses. And really this is a form of weaponry that the king had very little of. The king was not to multiply to himself horses, but Absalom is now doing this. And Samuel said back in 1 Samuel chapter 8, when the people first asked for a king, Samuel said that this very thing would happen. 1 Samuel 8, verse 11, "And he said, this will be the manner of the king that shall reign over you. He shall take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, and to be his horsemen, and some shall run before his chariots." So Samuel foresaw that the having of a king, which the people desired to have in the place of a judge, the having of a king would eventually lead to some of the kings being so fond of power, wanting to so vaunt themselves that they would do the things that God forbid, multiply the horses, have the chariots, and take the sons and the daughters of the people and use them for their servants. So now Absalom is beginning to do this, even though he's not a king. He's only the prince. He is the next in line for the kingship at this time, but there is no sign at all that David is going to give up the throne anytime soon. Verse 2, "And Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man that had a controversy came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, Of what city art thou? And he said, Thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel." So we see here how Absalom worked hard at gaining the hearts of the people and running down the government in the eyes of the common people. What he would do is to rise up early. Now he gave the appearance that he was very eager, that he was very energetic, and he did put a lot of energy into this. He rose up early, maybe before the other judges of the land were ready to go to work, maybe before the other sons of David were ready to go to work. He would rise up early. And he stood beside the way of the gate. That is, he was right there at the gate so that all who came to Jerusalem would have to come within his vicinity. He could have an opportunity to make contact with them. And it was so that when any man that had a controversy came to the king for judgment. So here were people coming from all parts of the land, coming to the city of Jerusalem, coming to the city to have their case ruled upon, having judgment to be pronounced upon them by the king or by one of the king's subordinates. But anyone who came with a situation like this, with a cause like this, Absalom would make contact with him. And he would then use his position to gain the favor of that person. And here's the way he did it. "Then Absalom called unto him and said, Of what city art thou?" He first of all found out where they're from. He took an interest in them. Whatever part of the country they were living in, he had a deep interest in it, just like any politician who's trying to gain office. He gives the appearance that he's interested in every part of the country and every last person in the nation. This is the way Absalom did. "Of what city art thou?" And he said, "Thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel." Now, some translations say that this actually should be written, "And when he said," that is when the person that Absalom was addressing the question to, "Of what city art thou?" then this would be the answer given back to Absalom. "And when he said, Thy servant is of one of the tribes of Israel," showing that he was truly an Israelite, then Absalom, verse 3, "said unto him, See, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man deputed of the king to hear thee. So what Absalom would do is he'd tell the person, whatever his cause was, he would say that thy matters are good and right. Now he's gaining the favor of the people. He's implying to each one that he's got a good cause, that he is right, that he is good, and that he should get a favorable judgment. Well, we see that this proves that Absalom is not a good judge, because he passes judgment after hearing just one side of the case. He doesn't even bother to hear the other side of it. When he hears the one side, then he immediately tells this person, yes, you're right, you're good, you've got a good cause, and you should have a good judgment given to you. But then he also says to that person that there is no man deputed of the king to hear thee. That is, the king doesn't have anybody appointed to hear your case. The kingdom has become so slack, has become so poorly run, that nobody is appointed to take care of this matter. You're going to have to do without good and proper judgment, because the king's not taking care of the affairs of the nation like he should. That's really what he's telling the people. Now, if I were judge, I would sure give you a favorable judgment, because you've got a real good cause. Well, you can see how this would cause anyone to be favorably inclined towards Absalom. First of all, he's lying. He is running down his father, the king. He's running down the nation. He is trying to build himself up at somebody else's expense. And so he's misrepresented the thing. Second of all, he appeals to the emotions of these people by telling them that he feels they've got a good and just cause. Of course, anyone who comes to the judge and brings a case usually feels like they have a good cause. They feel like that they have a good reason to bring the thing to trial, or they wouldn't be doing it. And so when somebody agrees with them, then this is certainly what they want to hear. This is music to anybody's ears who's in this position. And so Absalom is then taking advantage of the people. So in verse 4, Absalom said, moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice. So here we see what Absalom is truly wanting. He's wanting to be the supreme judge of the land. And so he makes this statement, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me. So he wants to be in such a position that everybody who has any suit, any cause, would come to him. He wants to be judge over every case of controversy in the whole land. Now this is quite an awesome position that he tries to thrust himself into. This is a very haughty and high desire to have. It's one that's impossible for any man to feel. Nobody could properly feel this. Even during the time of Moses, when Moses was the supreme judge, he was told in Exodus 18, verse 21, that he was to appoint other men under him to assist him. He would have judges over thousands, and judges over hundreds, and judges over fifties, and judges over tens. Get righteous men to help him do this. So even Moses couldn't have carried such an awesome task as this, but yet Absalom expresses openly the desire to have it. He said, and I would do him justice. Oh, if I were just the judge, if I were the judge over all the land, you come to me and bring this grievance, I would do you justice. I'd see that you get the thing done for you that you need to have done. And so you can see how this is simply political maneuvering, gaining the favor of the people, but Absalom seems to be very good at it, because he is doing it, and he is certainly vaunting himself up to a position where he can then challenge David for the throne. Verse 5, and it was so that when any man came nigh unto him to do obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. So not only did he tell him that he would give him a good judgment, but when the man came to him, Absalom made contact with him, put his hand forth, he took a hold of him, and he kissed him. That is, he embraced him, he kissed him, he let him know that he was his true friend. That is, on the outside he was. And all the time, Absalom is simply trying to build himself up, vaunt himself, so that he then become a challenger to his father the king for rule of the kingdom. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. So the man is very sly and cunning. He knows how to launch himself into the political favor of the common everyday people. He goes out and meets them in the gate early in the morning, proclaims that they've got a good and just cause. The king doesn't have enough deputies to even hear their case. But if I were judge, I would give you justice. I would do that which is right. He embraces the people. He kisses each one. And then he stole the hearts of the men of Israel. Everyone who came to the king for judgment, first of all, had this little encounter with Absalom, so that Absalom then is in a position to gain a favor of the people. So not only does he do this to gain their favor, but he also is a man who is of very beautiful stature. He is, from his head to the sole of his foot, perfect without a single blemish in his whole body. And so here we have this handsome, good-looking young man who is actually the son of the king, come meet every poor common person that comes for judgment. He embraces them. He tells them how good he would treat them if he were the judge, how that the king doesn't have enough judges to really go around to hear their case. And so he stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And we can see then how that by cunning devices, by being sly, by lying, by pretending to be something that we really aren't, we can many times gain the favor of someone who is really unaware of what our true intentions and purposes are. Verse 7, and it came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said unto the king. Now, I would like to note here that this space of 40 years, we have to try to determine when this is dated from, because it's not dated from the beginning of David's reign. Otherwise, David would be in the very last year of his reign. It's not dated from the beginning of Saul's reign, because Saul reigned for 40 years. So it has to be dated sometime back before David became king. And it's more than likely dated from the time that Samuel first anointed David to be king, which would be about 10 years before David actually became king. And so it would mean that David was in about the 30th year of his reign at this time. He still has about 10 years to go. And that would fit with all of our sequence of events. However, this may not be exactly the right time. David may not have quite 10 years to go, but it's going to be somewhere in that vicinity from what we learn happens after this. But it came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said unto the king, I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow, which I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. So Absalom comes to David, and he tells him, and this is certainly a pretense, this is a lie, but he does it to be able to do what he wants to without the king becoming suspicious. He says, let me go to Hebron and pay my vow which I vowed unto the Lord. Now he said, I've made a vow to God, and I need to go to Hebron to be able to carry this vow out. Now this sounds like a very high and honorable thing for anybody to do, to get close to God, to make a vow to God, now to want to carry the vow out. And he further explains the vow, verse 8, for thy servant vowed a vow while I abode at Geshur in Syria. So while I was in exile in Syria, at Geshur, I made a vow, saying that if the Lord shall bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord. So he tells what his fictitious vow is, that while I was over there, I said to God that if you'll just let me come back to Jerusalem, let me come back to the city of the king, the city of God, then I will serve the Lord. And well, this really was designed to win the heart of David. David had to take some close attention to this statement by Absalom, because it seems that here was a man that really, truly was penitent. He wanted to come back to God. He made a vow that if he was allowed to do so, that he would then serve God. And so certainly this is a very high and honorable cause. And David wouldn't want to do anything to jeopardize the carrying out of this vow that his son had made to God. So verse 9 says, and the king said unto him, go in peace. So he arose and went to Hebron. Now we want to note that Hebron is the place that David first reigned for some 7.5 years. It is the place that Absalom was born. He was well familiar with it. And it was still a place that would be of considerable import in the tribe of Judah. And of course, if Absalom could first of all gain the tribe of Judah, where he probably had the most strength, then he would be more apt to be able to gain the other tribes of Israel also. So he arose and went to Hebron. But Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribe of Israel, saying, "As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then shall you say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron." So he had a well-planned organization so that he had spies, or he had those that were in favor of his cause, that went out throughout all the tribes of Israel. They were ready for the sound to be given, and as soon as they heard the sound, as soon as the sound of the trumpet came forth, this would ring through the land from one to the other, then they were to say that Absalom reigneth in Hebron. They were to tell the rest of the tribes and the people that there's been an overthrow of the government. Absalom now is on the throne. He's reigning in Hebron. And naturally, all these people that had come to Jerusalem and had personal contact with Absalom, that had had Absalom to promise them that he'd give them the right judgment, let them know that he was in favor of them, that they had a good cause, they would all be inclined to say, "Well, this is good. Let's follow Absalom. He's now reigning. He's now leading us. So let's give him opportunity to go ahead and continue to give us a good reign." These people would be led to believe that maybe David had resigned the throne, or David had died, or for some other reason he no longer desired to reign. And so they would fall into line then with Absalom before they realized even what the true nature of the situation was. And this is a lesson for us, that we shouldn't believe everything that we hear until we have some good reason to believe it. As long as it's in the rumor stage, let's treat it just like that's what it is, a rumor, until we know for sure that it is something that is the truth. But before anybody really knew what was going on, Absalom had a large part of the nation following him, thinking he was the king and ready to do battle and defend him as such. Now verse 11 says, "And with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were called. And they went in their simplicity, and they knew not anything." So when he made this journey down to Hebron, he took 200 men with him. It seems that they were prominent person, they were called, but they didn't know anything about this revolt of Absalom. They didn't know anything about his intention or his desire. They knew not anything. They were simply going for the purpose of helping Absalom to carry out this vow and this feast to God. And so this then would also give him the appearance of being legitimate. It would give him the appearance of having a good and honorable cause. The very fact that these 200 men were with him and a part of his party. Now in verse 12 we have another character to enter upon the scene. The man Ahithophel. Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilla, while he offered sacrifices. So in the very middle of offering these sacrifices, in the very midst of going through this pretense of keeping a vow to God, he sends for Ahithophel. Now Ahithophel is a man who at a former time had been a counselor of David. We do not know why he was not at this time, whether it was because he found disfavor with David or whether David found disfavor with him, but we see that the man was wise. He was able to handle things of a political nature, and because of his unscrupulous actions, though, it very well may be that he couldn't get along with David because David couldn't countenance a man of this character. But at this time, he was at his home, Gilla, which is in the hill country of Judea. He is not with David, and it may be that he no longer is David's counselor at the present time, but nevertheless, Absalom chose a very able person when he chose Ahithophel to be his assistant. So he sent for him while he was in the middle of offering these sacrifices. And so here was a man that had been David's counselor. He knew the workings of the kingdom. He knew how to give Absalom the proper advice so that he then could have the greatest advantage in his usurping of the throne here. And so the last sentence of verse 12 says, "And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom." Now here was a a great gathering of the people so far as following Absalom was concerned. They had large numbers. The conspiracy was strong, and before David was even aware that there was a problem in the land, then Absalom had a very strong segment of the populace in his favor and moving against David. So finally, in verse 13, we learn that the message did get to David. And there came a messenger to David saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom." Now, the message was given to David, and perhaps it was painted up to be worse than it actually was. It was told to David as though all the kingdom, the prominent men of the kingdom at least, were going after his son Absalom. David now learns that there is a rebellion in the land. He now learns that his son has set up a rival throne, and that he's going to have to take some very strong and stern action in order to prevent this thing. But he's got a big job upon his hands, for Absalom has already really gotten a hold on the minds of the people. He has persuaded them that he is right for the country, that he is right for them as an individual. He's been working on this thing for a long time and putting a lot of energy into it, while David was even unaware that it was going on. And so he's got a tremendous head start on David at this point. For some reason, Absalom either wants to get revenge on his father, or he simply just wants the joy of having the power of being the king of the land. We're going to close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friend.